side. He shouted, "Ha!" and he shouted, "Gee!" and he drove them past the house. He drove them out onto the road. They stopped when he shouted, "Whoa!" Pierre and Louis were excited now. They piled onto the sled, but Almanzo made them slide back. He was going to ride, too. He sat in front. Pierre held on to him, and Louis held on to Pierre. Their legs stuck out, and they held them stiffly up above the snow. Almanzo proudly cracked his whip and shouted, "Gadap!" Up went Star's tail. Up went Bright's tail. Up went their heels. The sled bounced into the air, and then everything happened all at once. "Baa! Oh!" said Star. "Baa! Oh!" said Bright. Right in Almanzo's face were flying hooves and swishing tails, and close overhead were galumphing hindquarters. "Whoa!" yelled Almanzo. "Whoa!" "Baa!" said Bright. "Baa!" said Star. It was far swifter than sliding downhill. Trees and snow and calves' hind legs were all mixed up. Every time the sled came down, Almanzo's teeth crashed together. Bright was running faster than Star. They were going off the road. The sled was turning over. Almanzo yelled, "Ha! Ha!" He went headlong into deep snow, yelling, "Ha!" His open mouth was full of snow. He spit it out and wallowed, scrambled up. Everything was still. The road was empty. The calves were gone. The sled was gone. Pierre and Louis were coming up out of the snow. Louis was swearing in French, but Almanzo paid no attention to him. Pierre sputtered and wiped the snow from his face and said, "Sacre bleu! I think you say you drive your calves. They not run away, eh?" Far down the road, almost buried in the deep drifts by the mound of snow over the stone fence, Almanzo saw the calves' red backs. "They did not run away," he said to Pierre. "They only ran. There they be." He went down to look at them. Their heads and their backs were above the snow. The yoke was crooked and their necks were askew in the bows. Their noses were together and their eyes were large and wondering. They seemed to be asking each other, "What happened?" Pierre and Louis helped dig the snow away from them and the sled. Almanzo straightened the yoke and the chain. Then he stood in front of them and said, "Get up," while Pierre and Louis pushed them from behind. The calves climbed into the road, and Almanzo headed them toward the barn. They went willingly. Almanzo walked beside Star, cracking his whip and shouting, and everything he told them to do, they did. Pierre and Louis walked behind. They would not ride. Almanzo put the calves in their stall and gave them each a nubbin of corn. He wiped the yoke carefully and hung it up. He put the whip on its nail, and he wiped the chain and the linchpin and put them where Father had left them. Then he told Pierre and Louis that they could sit behind him, and they slid downhill on the sled till chore time. That night Father asked him, "You have some trouble this afternoon, son?"
"No,"
Almanzo said. "I just found out I have to break Star and Bright to drive when I ride." So he did that in the barnyard. The turn of the year. The days were growing longer, but the cold was more intense. Father said, "When the days begin to lengthen, the cold begins to strengthen." At last, the snow softened a little on the south and west slopes. At noon, the icicles dripped. Sap was rising in the trees, and it was time to make sugar. In the cold mornings, just before sunrise, Almanzo and Father set out to the maple grove. Father had a big wooden yoke on his shoulders, and Almanzo had a little yoke. From the ends of the yokes hung strips of moose wood bark, with large iron hooks on them, and a big wooden bucket swung from each hook. In every maple tree, Father had bored a small hole and fitted a little wooden spout into it. Sweet maple sap was dripping from the spouts into small pails. Going from tree to tree, Almanzo emptied the sap into his big buckets. The weight hung from his shoulders, but he steadied the buckets with his hands to keep them from swinging. When they were full, he went to the great cauldron and emptied them into it. The huge cauldron hung from a pole set between two trees. Father kept a bonfire blazing under it to boil the sap. Almanzo loved trudging through the frozen wild woods. He walked on snow that had never been walked on before, and only his own tracks followed behind him. Busily, he emptied the little pails into the buckets, and whenever he was thirsty, he drank some of the thin, sweet, icy-cold sap. He liked to go back to the roaring fire. He poked it and saw sparks fly. He warmed his face and hands in the scorching heat and smelled the sap boiling. Then he went into the woods again. At noon, all the sap was boiling in the cauldron. Father opened the lunch pail, and Almanzo sat on the log beside him. They ate and talked. Their feet were stretched out to the fire, and a pile of logs was at their backs. All around them were snow and ice and wild woods, but they were snug and cozy. After they had eaten, Father stayed by the fire to watch the sap, but Almanzo hunted wintergreen berries. Under the snow, on the south slopes, the bright red berries were ripe among their thick green leaves. Almanzo took off his mittens and pawed away the snow with his bare hands. He found the red clusters and filled his mouth full. The cold berries crunched between his teeth, gushing out their aromatic juice. Nothing else was ever so good as wintergreen berries dug out of the snow. Almanzo's clothes were covered with snow. His fingers were stiff and red with cold, but he never left a south slope until he had pawed it all over. When the sun was low behind the maple trunks, Father threw snow on the fire, and it died in sizzles and steam. Then Father dipped the hot syrup into the buckets. He and Almanzo set their shoulders under the yokes again and carried the buckets home. They poured the syrup into Mother's big brass kettle on the cook stove. Then Almanzo began the chores while Father fetched the rest of the syrup from the woods. After supper, the syrup was ready to sugar off. Mother ladled it into 6-quart milk pans and left it to cool. In the morning, every pan held a big cake of solid maple sugar. Mother dumped out the round golden-brown cakes and stored them on the top pantry shelves. Day after day, the sap was running, and every morning, Almanzo went with Father to gather and boil it. Every night, Mother sugared it off. They made all the sugar they could use next year. Then the last boiling of syrup was not sugared off. It was stored in jugs down cellar, and that was the year's syrup. When Alice came home from school, she smelled Almanzo, and she cried out, "Oh, you've been eating wintergreen berries!" She thought it wasn't fair that she had to go to school while Almanzo gathered sap and ate wintergreen berries. She said, "Boys have all the fun." She made Almanzo promise that he wouldn't touch the south slopes along Trout River beyond the sheep pasture. So on Saturdays, they went together to paw over those slopes. When Almanzo found a red cluster, he yelled, and when Alice found one, she squealed. And sometimes they divided, and sometimes they didn't. But they went on their hands and knees all over those south slopes, and they ate wintergreen berries all afternoon. Almanzo brought home a pail full of thick green leaves, and Alice crammed them into a big bottle. Mother filled the bottle with whiskey and set it away. That was her wintergreen flavoring for cakes and cookies. Every day the snow was melting a little. The cedars and spruces shook it off, and it fell in blobs from the bare branches of oaks and maples and beeches. All along the walls of barns and house, the snow was pitted with water falling from the icicles. And finally, the icicles fell crashing. The earth showed in wet, dark patches here and there. The patches spread. Only the trodden paths were still white, and a little snow remained on the north sides of the buildings and woodpiles. Then the winter term of school ended, and spring had come. One morning, Father drove to Malone. Before noon, he came hurrying home and shouted the news from the buggy. The New York potato buyers were in town. Royal ran to help hitch the team to the wagon. Alice and Almanzo ran to get bushel baskets from the woodshed. They rolled them bumpity-bump down the cellar stairs and began filling them with potatoes as fast as they could. They filled two baskets before Father drove the wagon to the kitchen porch. Then the race began. Father and Royal hurried the baskets upstairs and dumped them into the wagon, and Almanzo and Alice hurried to fill more baskets faster than they were carried away. Almanzo tried to fill more baskets than Alice, but he couldn't. She worked so fast that she was turning back to the bin while her hoop skirts were still whirling the other way. When she pushed back her curls, her hands left smudges on her cheeks. Almanzo laughed at her dirty face, and she laughed at him. "Look at yourself in the glass. You're dirtier than I be." They kept the baskets full. Father and Royal never had to wait. When the wagon was full, Father drove away in a hurry. It was mid-afternoon before he came back, but Royal and Almanzo and Alice filled the wagon again while he ate some cold dinner, and he hauled another load away. That night, Alice helped Royal and Almanzo do the chores. Father was not there for supper. He did not come home before bedtime. Royal sat up to wait for him. Late in the night, Almanzo heard the wagon, and Royal went out to help Father curry and brush the tired horses who had done 20 miles of hauling that day. The next morning, and the next, they all began loading by candlelight, and Father was gone with the first load before sunrise. On the third day, the potato train left for New York City. But all Father's potatoes were on it. 500 bushels at $1 a bushel, he said to Mother at supper. I told you when potatoes were cheap last fall that they'd be high in the spring. That was $500 in the bank. They were all proud of Father, who raised good potatoes and knew so well when to store them and when to sell them. That's pretty good, Mother said, beaming. They all felt happy. But later Mother said, Well, now that's off our hands. We'll start house cleaning tomorrow, bright and early. Almanzo hated house cleaning. He had to pull up carpet tacks all around the edges of miles of carpet. Then the carpets were hung on clotheslines outdoors, and he had to beat them with a long stick. When he was little, he had run under the carpets, playing they were tents. But now he was 9 years old, he had to beat those carpets without stopping till no more dust would come out of them. Everything in the house was moved. Everything was scrubbed and scoured and polished. All the curtains were down, all the feather beds were outdoors airing, all the blankets and quilts were washed. From dawn to dark, Almanzo was running, pumping water, fetching wood, spreading clean straw on the scrub floors, and then helping to stretch the carpets over it, and then tacking all those edges down again. Days and days he spent in the cellar. He helped Royal empty the vegetable bins. They sorted out every spoiled apple and carrot and turnip and put back the good ones into a few bins that Mother had scrubbed. They took down the other bins and stored them in the woodshed. They carried out crocks and jars and jugs till the cellar was almost empty. Then Mother scrubbed the walls and floor. Royal poured water into pails of lime, and Almanzo stirred the lime till it stopped boiling and was whitewash. Then they whitewashed the whole cellar. That was fun. Mercy on us, Mother said when they came upstairs. Did you get as much whitewash on the cellar as you got on yourselves? The whole cellar was fresh and clean and snow white when it dried. Mother moved her milk pans down to the scrubbed shelves. The butter tubs were scoured white with sand and dried in the sun, and Almanzo set them in a row on the clean cellar floor to be filled with the summer's butter. Outdoors, the lilacs and the snowball bushes were in bloom. Violets and buttercups were blossoming in the green pastures. Birds were building their nests, and it was time to work in the fields. Springtime. Now, breakfast was eaten before dawn, and the sun was rising beyond the dewy meadows when Almanzo drove his team from the barns. He had to stand on a box to lift the heavy collars onto the horses' shoulders and to slip the bridles over their ears, but he knew how to drive. He had learned when he was little. Father wouldn't let him touch the colts nor drive the spirited young horses, but now that he was old enough to work in the fields, he could drive the old, gentle work team, Bess and Beauty. They were wise, sober mares. When they were turned out to pasture, they did not whinny and gallop like colts. They looked about them, lay down and rolled once or twice, and then fell to eating grass. When they were harnessed, they stepped sedately one behind the other over the sill of the barn door, sniffed the spring air, and waited patiently for the traces to be fastened. They were older than Almanzo, and he was going on 10. They knew how to plow without stepping on corn or making the furrows crooked. They knew how to harrow and to turn at the end of the field. Almanzo would have enjoyed driving them more if they hadn't known so much. He hitched them to the harrow. Last fall, the fields had been plowed and covered with manure. Now the lumpy soil must be harrowed. Bess and Beauty stepped out willingly, not too fast, yet fast enough to harrow well. They liked to work in the springtime, after the long winter of standing in their stalls. Back and forth across the field, they pulled the harrow, while Almanzo walked behind it holding the reins. At the end of the row, he turned the team around and set the harrow so that its teeth barely overlapped the strip already harrowed. Then he slapped the reins on the horses' rumps, shouted, "Get up!" and away they went again. All over the countryside, other boys were harrowing too, turning up the moist earth to the sunshine. Far to the north, the St. Lawrence River was a silver streak at the edge of the sky. The woods were clouds of delicate green. Birds hopped twittering on the stone fences, and squirrels frisked. Almanzo walked whistling behind his team. When he harrowed the whole field across one way, then he harrowed it across the other way. The harrow's sharp teeth combed again and again through the earth, breaking up the lumps. All the soil must be made mellow and fine and smooth. By and by, Almanzo was too hungry to whistle. He grew hungrier and hungrier. It seemed that noon would never come. He wondered how many miles he'd walked, and still the sun seemed to stand still. The shadows seemed not to change at all. He was starving. At last the sun stood overhead. The shadows were quite gone. Almanzo harrowed another row and another. Then at last he heard the horns blowing far and near. Clear and joyful came the sound of Mother's big tin dinner horn. Bess and Beauty pricked up their ears and stepped more briskly. At the edge of the field toward the house, they stopped. Almanzo unfastened the traces and looped them up, and leaving the harrow in the field, he climbed onto Beauty's broad back. He rode down to the pump house and let the horses drink. He put them in their stall, took off their bridles, gave them their grain. A good horseman always takes care of his horses before he eats or rests. But Almanzo hurried. How good dinner was, and how he ate! Father heaped his plate again and again, and Mother smiled and gave him 2 pieces of pie. He felt better when he went back to work, but the afternoon seemed much longer than the morning. He was tired when he rode down to the barns at sunset to do the chores. At supper he was drowsy, and as soon as he had eaten, he climbed upstairs and went to bed. It was so good to stretch out on the soft bed. Before he could pull up the coverlet, he fell fast asleep. In just a minute, Mother's candlelight shone on the stairs and she was calling. Another day had begun. There was no time to lose, no time to waste in rest or play. The life of the earth comes up with a rush in the springtime. All the wild seeds of weed and thistle, the sprouts of vine and bush and tree are trying to take the fields. Farmers must fight them with harrow and plow and hoe. They must plant the good seeds quickly. Almanzo was a little soldier in this great battle. From dawn to dark he worked. From dark to dawn he slept. Then he was up again and working. He harrowed the potato field till the soil was smooth and mellow and every little sprouting weed was killed. Then he helped Royal take the seed potatoes from the bin in the cellar and cut them into pieces, leaving two or three eyes on each piece. Potato plants have blossoms and seeds, but no one knows what kind of potato will grow from a potato seed. All the potatoes of one kind that have ever been grown have come from one potato. A potato is not a seed. It is part of a potato plant's root. Cut it up and plant it, and it will always make more potatoes just like itself. Every potato has several little dents in it that look like eyes. From these eyes, the little roots grow down into the soil, and little leaves push up toward the sun. They eat up the piece of potato while they are small, before they are strong enough to take their food from the earth and the air. Father was marking the field. The marker was a log with a row of wooden pegs driven into it, 3.5 feet apart. One horse drew the log crosswise behind him, and the pegs made little furrows. Father marked the field lengthwise and crosswise, so the furrows made little squares. Then the planting began. Father and Royal took their hoes, and Alice and Almanzo carried pails full of pieces of potato. Almanzo went in front of Royal, and Alice went in front of Father down the rows. At the corner of each square, where the furrows crossed, Almanzo dropped one piece of potato. He must drop it exactly in the corner so that the rows would be straight and could be plowed. Royal covered it with dirt and patted it firm with the hoe. Behind Alice, Father covered the pieces of potato that she dropped. Planting potatoes was fun. A good smell came from the fresh earth and from the clover fields. Alice was pretty and gay with the breeze blowing her curls and setting her hoop skirt swaying. Father was jolly, and they all talked while they worked. Almanzo and Alice tried to drop the potatoes so fast that they'd have a minute at the end of a row to look for birds' nests or chase a lizard into the stone fence. But Father and Royal were never far behind. Father said, "Hustle along there, son, hustle along." So they hustled, and when they were far enough ahead, Almanzo plucked a grass stem and made it whistle between his thumbs. Alice tried, but she could not do that. She could pucker her mouth and whistle. Royal teased her. "Whistling girls and crowing hens always come to some bad ends." Back and forth across the field they went all morning, all afternoon, for 3 days. Then the potatoes were planted. Then Father sowed the grain. He sowed a field of wheat for white bread, a field of rye for rye and Injun bread, and a field of oats mixed with Canada peas to feed the horses and cows next winter. While Father sowed the grain, Almanzo followed him over the fields with Bess and Beauty, harrowing the seeds into the earth. Almanzo could not sow grain yet. He must practice a long time before he could spread the seeds evenly. That is hard to do. The heavy sack of grain hung from a strap over Father's left shoulder. As he walked, he took handfuls of grain from the sack. With a sweep of his arm and a bend of his wrist, he let the little grains fly from his fingers. The sweep of his arm kept time with his steps, and when Father finished sowing a field, every inch of ground had its evenly scattered seeds, nowhere too many or too few. The seeds were too small to be seen on the ground, and you could not know how skillful a sower a man was till the seeds came up. Father told Almanzo about a lazy, worthless boy who had been sent to sow a field. This boy did not want to work, so he poured the seeds out of his sack and went swimming. Nobody saw him. Afterward, he harrowed the field, and no one knew what he had done. But the seeds knew, and the earth knew, and when even the boy had forgotten his wickedness, they told it. Weeds took that field. When all the grain was sowed, Almanzo and Alice planted the carrots. They had sacks full of the little red round carrot seeds hanging from their shoulders like Father's big seed sack. Father had marked the carrot field lengthwise with a marker whose teeth were only 18 inches apart. Almanzo and Alice, with the carrot seeds, went up and down the long field, straddling the little furrows. Now the weather was so warm that they could go barefooted. Their bare feet felt good in the air and the soft dirt. They dribbled the carrot seeds into the furrows, and with their feet they pushed the dirt over the seeds and pressed it down. Almanzo could see his feet, but of course Alice's were hidden under her skirts. Her hoops rounded out, and she had to pull them back and stooped to drop the seeds neatly into the furrow. Almanzo asked her if she didn't want to be a boy. She said, yes, she did. Then she said, no, she didn't. Boys aren't pretty like girls, and they can't wear ribbons. I don't care how pretty I be, Almanzo said, and I wouldn't wear ribbons anyhow. Well, I like to make butter, and I like to patch quilts, and I cook and sew and spin. Boys can't do that. But even if I be a girl, I can drop potatoes and sow carrots and drive horses as well as you can. You can't whistle on a grass stem, Almanzo said. At the end of the row, he looked at the ash tree's crumpled new leaves and asked Alice if she knew when to plant corn. She didn't, so he told her. Corn planting time is when the ash leaves are as big as squirrel's ears. How big a squirrel? Alice asked. Just an ordinary squirrel. Well, those leaves are as big as a baby squirrel's ears, and it isn't corn planting time. For a minute, Almanzo didn't know what to think. Then he said, a baby squirrel isn't a squirrel, it's a kitten. But it's just as much a squirrel as... No, it isn't. It's a kitten. Little cats are kittens, and little foxes are kittens, and little squirrels are kittens. A kitten isn't a cat, and a kitten isn't a squirrel either. Oh, Alice said. When the ash leaves were big enough, Almanzo helped to plant corn. The field had been marked with a potato marker, and Father and Royal and Almanzo planted it together. They wore bags of seed corn tied around their waists like aprons, and they carried hoes. At the corner of each square, where the furrows crossed, they stirred up the soil with the hoe and made a shallow hollow in it, dropped two grains of corn into the hollow, and covered them with dirt and patted the dirt firm. Father and Royal worked fast. Their hands and their hoes made exactly the same movements every time. Three quick slashes and a dab with the hoe, a flash of the hand, then a scoop and two pats with the hoe, and that hill of corn was planted. Then they made one quick stride forward and did it again. But Almanzo had never planted corn before. He did not handle the hoe so well. He had to trot two steps where Royal or Father took one because his legs were shorter. Father and Royal were ahead of him all the time. He could not keep up. One of them finished out his row each time so that he could start out even again. But he knew he would plant corn as fast as anybody when his legs were longer. Tin Peddler. One evening after sunset, Almanzo saw a white horse pulling a large, bright red cart up the road, and he yelled, "The Tin Peddler's coming! The Tin Peddler's coming!" Alice ran out of the hen house with her apron full of eggs. Mother and Eliza Jane came to the kitchen door. Royal popped up out of the pump house, and the young horses put their heads through the windows of their stalls and whinnied to the big white horse. Nick Brown, the Tin Peddler, was a jolly, fat man who told stories and sang songs. In the springtime, he went driving along all the country roads, bringing news from far and near. His cart was like a little house, swinging on stout leather straps between four high wheels. It had a door on either side, and from its rear, a platform slanted upward like a bird's tail, held in place by straps that went to the cart's top. There was a fancy railing all around the top of the cart, and the cart and the platform and the wheels were all painted bright red with beautiful scrolls painted bright yellow. High in front rode Nick Brown on a red seat above the rump of the sturdy white horse. Almanzo and Alice and Royal and even Eliza Jane were waiting when the cart stopped by the kitchen porch, and Mother was smiling in the doorway. "How do you do, Mr. Brown?" she called. "Put up your horse and come right in. Supper's almost ready." And Father called from the barn, "Drive it into the buggy house, Nick. There's plenty of room." Almanzo unhitched the sleek big horse and led him to water, then put him in a stall and gave him a double feed of oats and plenty of hay. Mr. Brown carefully curry-combed and brushed him and rubbed him down with clean cloths. He was a good horseman. After that, he looked at all the stock and gave his opinion of it. He admired Star and Bright and praised Father's colts. "You ought to get a good price for those coming four-year-olds," he said to Father. "Over by Saranac, the New York buyers are looking for driving horses. One of them paid $200 apiece last week for a team not a mite better than these." Almanzo could not speak while grown-ups were talking, of course, but he could listen. He didn't miss anything that Mr. Brown said, and he knew that the best time of all was coming after supper. Nick Brown could tell more funny stories and sing more songs than any other man. He said so himself, and it was true. "Yes, sir," he said, "I'll back myself, not alone against any man, but against any crowd of men. I'll tell story for story and sing song for song as long as you'll bring men up against me. And when they're all done, I'll tell the last story and sing the last song." Father knew this was true. He had heard Nick Brown do it in Mr. Case's store in Malone. So after supper, they all settled down by the heater, and Mr. Brown began. It was after 9 o'clock before anyone went to bed, and Almanzo's sides ached with laughing. Next morning after breakfast, Mr. Brown hitched the white horse to the cart and drove it up to the kitchen porch, and he opened the red doors. Inside the cart was everything ever made of tin. On shelves along the walls were nests of bright tin pails and pans and basins, cake pans, pie pans, bread pans, and dish pans. Overhead dangled cups and dippers, skimmers and strainers, steamers, colanders, and graters. There were tin horns, tin whistles, toy tin dishes, and patty pans. There were all kinds of little animals made out of tin and brightly painted. Mr. Brown had made all these himself in the wintertime, and every piece was made of good thick tin, well made and solidly soldered. Mother brought the big rag bags from the attic and emptied on the porch floor all the rags she had saved during the last year. Mr. Brown examined the good clean rags of wool and linen while Mother looked at the shining tinware, and they began to trade. For a long time they talked and argued. Shining tinware and piles of rags were all over the porch. For every pile of rags that Nick Brown added to the big pile, Mother asked more tinware than he wanted to trade her. They were both having a good time, joking and laughing and trading. At last Mr. Brown said, "Well, ma'am, I'll trade you the milk pans and pails, the colander and the skimmer and the 3 baking pans, but not the dishpan, and that's my final offer." "Very well, Mr. Brown," Mother said unexpectedly. She had got exactly what she wanted. Almanzo knew she did not need the dishpan. She had set it out only to bargain with. Mr. Brown knew that too now. He looked surprised, and he looked respectfully at Mother. Mother was a good, shrewd trader. She had bested Mr. Brown. But he was satisfied, too, because he had got plenty of good rags for his tinware. He gathered up the rags and tied them into a bale and heaved the bale onto the slanting platform behind his cart. The platform and the railing around the top of the cart were made to hold the rags he took in trade. Then Mr. Brown rubbed his hands together and looked around, smiling. "Well, now," he said, "I wonder what these young folks would like." He gave Eliza Jane 6 little diamond-shaped patty pans to bake little cakes in, and he gave Alice 6 heart-shaped ones, and he gave Almanzo a tin horn painted red. They all said, "Thank you, Mr. Brown." Then Mr. Brown climbed to his high seat and took up the reins. The big white horse stepped out eagerly, well-fed and brushed and rested. The red cart went past the house and lurched into the road, and Mr. Brown began to whistle. Mother had her tinware for that year, and Almanzo had his loud squawking horn, and Nick Brown rode whistling away between the green trees and the fields. Until he came again next spring, they would remember his news and laugh at his jokes, and behind the horses in the field, Almanzo would whistle the songs he had sung. The Strange Dog. Nick Brown had said that New York horse buyers were in the neighborhood. So every night, Father gave the 4-year-old colts a special careful grooming. The 4-year-olds were already perfectly broken, and Almanzo wanted so much to help groom them that Father let him. But he was allowed to go into their stalls only when Father was there. Carefully, Almanzo curry-combed and brushed their shining brown sides and their smooth, round haunches and slender legs. Then he rubbed them down with clean cloths. He combed and braided their black manes and their long black tails. With a little brush, he oiled their curved hooves till they shone black as Mother's polished stove. He was careful never to move suddenly and startle them. He talked to them while he worked in a gentle, low voice. The colts nibbled his sleeve with their lips and nuzzled at his pockets for the apples he brought them. They arched their necks when he rubbed their velvety noses, and their soft eyes shone. Almanzo knew that in the whole world there was nothing so beautiful, so fascinating, as beautiful horses. When he thought that it would be years and years before he could have a little colt to teach and take care of, he could hardly bear it. One evening, the horse buyer came riding into the barnyard. He was a strange horse buyer. Father had never seen him before. He was dressed in city clothes of machine-made cloth, and he tapped his shining tall boots with a little red whip. His black eyes were close to his thin nose. His black beard was trimmed into a point, and the ends of his mustache were waxed and twisted. He looked very strange, standing in the barnyard and thoughtfully twisting one end of his mustache into a sharper point. Father led out the colts. They were perfectly matched Morgans. Exactly the same size, the same shape, the same bright brown all over, with the same white stars on their foreheads. They arched their necks and picked up their little feet daintily. 4 years old in May, sound in wind and limb, not a blemish on them, Father said. Broken to drive double or single. They're high-spirited, full of ginger, and gentle as kittens. A lady can drive them. Almanzo listened. He was excited, but he remembered carefully everything that Father and the horse buyer said. Someday he would be trading horses himself. The buyer felt the colt's legs. He opened their mouths and looked at their teeth. Father had nothing to fear from that. He had told the truth about the colt's age. Then the buyer stood back and watched while Father took each colt on a long rope and made it walk, trot, and gallop in a circle around him. "Look at that action," Father said. The shining black manes and tails rippled in the air. Brown lights flowed over their smooth bodies, and their delicate feet seemed hardly to touch the ground. Round and round they went, like a tune. The buyer looked. He tried to find fault, but he couldn't. The colt stood still, and Father waited. Finally, the buyer offered $175 apiece. Father said he couldn't take less than $225. Almanzo knew he said that because he wanted $200. Nick Brown had told him that horse buyers were paying that much. Then Father hitched both colts to the buggy. He and the buyer climbed in, and away they went down the road. The colts' heads were high, their noses stretched out, their manes and tails blew in the wind of their speed, and their flashing legs moved all together as though the colts were one colt. The buggy was gone out of sight in a minute. Almanzo knew he must go on with the chores. He went into the barn and took the pitchfork. Then he put it down and came out to watch for the colt's return. When they came back, Father and the buyer had not agreed on the price. Father tugged at his beard and the buyer twisted his mustache. The buyer talked about the expense of taking the colts to New York and about the low prices there. He had to think of his profit. The best he could offer was $175. Father said, "I'll split the difference. $200, and that's my last price." The buyer thought and answered, "I don't see my way clear to pay that." "All right," Father said. "No hard feelings, and we'll be glad to have you stay to supper." He began to unhitch the colts. The buyer said, "Over by Saranac, they're selling better horses than these for $175. Father didn't answer. He unhitched the colts and led them toward their stalls. Then the buyer said, "All right, $200 it is. I'll lose money by it, but here you are." He took a fat wallet out of his pocket and gave Father $200 to bind the bargain. "Bring them to town tomorrow and get the rest." The colts were sold at Father's price. The buyer would not stay to supper. He rode away, and Father took the money to Mother in the kitchen. Mother exclaimed, "You mean to say we must keep all that money in the house overnight?" "It's too late to take it to the bank," Father said. "We're safe enough. Nobody but us knows the money's here." "I declare I shan't sleep a wink." "The Lord will take care of us," Father said. "The Lord helps them that helps themselves," Mother replied. "I wish to goodness that money was safe in the bank." It was already past chore time, and Almanzo had to hurry to the barn with the milk pails. If cows are not milked exactly the same time, night and morning, they will not give so much milk. Then there were the mangers and stalls to clean and all the stock to feed. It was almost 8 o'clock before everything was done, and Mother was keeping supper warm. Supper time was not as cheerful as usual. There was a dark, heavy feeling about that money. Mother had hidden it in the pantry. Then she hid it in the linen closet. And after supper, she began setting the sponge for tomorrow's baking and worrying again about the money. Her hands flew, the bread sponge made little plopping sounds under her spoon, and she was saying, "It don't seem as though anybody'd think to look between sheets in the closet, but I declare I... What's that?" They all jumped. They held their breaths and listened. "Something or somebody's prowling around this house," Mother breathed. All you could see when you looked at the windows was blackness outside.
"Pshaw! 'Twan't anything," Father said.
"I tell you, I heard something."
"I didn't," Father said.
"Royal," said Mother, "you go look." Royal opened the kitchen door and peered into the dark. After a minute, he said,
"It's nothing but a stray dog."
"Drive it away," said Mother. Royal went out and drove it away. Almanzo wished he had a dog. But a little dog digs up the garden and chases hens and sucks eggs, and a big dog may kill sheep. Mother always said there was stock enough on the place without a dirty dog. She set away the bread sponge. Almanzo washed his feet. He had to wash his feet every night when he went barefoot. He was washing them when they all heard a stealthy sound on the back porch. Mother's eyes were big. Royal said, "It's only that dog." He opened the door. At first they saw nothing, and Mother's eyes got bigger. Then they saw a big, thin dog cringing away in the shadows. His ribs showed under his fur.
"Oh, Mother, the poor dog!" Alice cried. "Please, Mother, can I give him just a little bit to eat?"
"Goodness, child, yes," Mother said. "You can drive him away in the morning, Royal." Alice set out a pan of food for the dog. He dared not come near it while the door was open, but when Almanzo shut the door, they heard him chewing. Mother tried the door twice to make sure it was locked. The dark came into the kitchen when they left it with the candles, and the dark looked in through the dining room windows. Mother locked both dining room doors, and she even went into the parlor and tried the parlor door, though it was always kept locked. Almanzo lay in bed a long time, listening and staring at the dark, but at last he fell asleep, and he did not know what happened in the night till Mother told it the next morning. She had put the money under Father's socks in the bureau drawer, but after she went to bed, she got up again and put it under her pillow. She did not think she would sleep at all, but she must have, because in the night something woke her. She sat bolt upright in bed. Father was sound asleep. The moon was shining, and she could see the lilac bush in the yard. Everything was still. The clock struck 11. Then Mother's blood ran cold. She heard a low, savage growl. She got out of bed and went to the window. The strange dog stood under it, bristling and showing his teeth. He acted as though somebody was in the woodlot. Mother stood listening and looking. It was dark under the trees, and she could not see anyone, but the dog growled savagely at the darkness. Mother watched. She heard the clock strike midnight, and after a long time it struck 1 o'clock. The dog walked up and down by the picket fence, growling. At last he lay down, but he kept his head up and his ears pricked, listening. Mother went softly back to bed. At dawn, the dog was gone. They looked for him, but they could not find him anywhere. But his tracks were in the yard, and on the other side of the fence, in the woodlot, Father found the tracks of 2 men's boots. He hitched up at once before breakfast and tied the colts behind the buggy and drove to Malone. He put the $200 in the bank. He delivered the colts to the horse buyer and got the other $200 and put that in the bank, too. When he came back, he told Mother, "You were right. We came near being robbed last night." A farmer near Malone had sold a team the week before and kept the money in his house. That night, robbers broke into his house while he was asleep. They tied up his wife and children, and they beat him almost to death to make him tell where the money was hidden. They took the money and got away. The sheriff was looking for them. "I wouldn't be surprised if that horse buyer had a hand in it," Father said. "Who else knew we had money in the house?" "But it couldn't be proved. I made inquiry, and he was at the hotel in Malone last night." Mother said she would always believe that Providence had sent that strange dog to watch over them. Almanzo thought perhaps he stayed because Alice fed him.
"Maybe he was sent to try us," Mother said. "Maybe the Lord was merciful to us because we were merciful to him."
They never saw the strange dog again. Perhaps he was a poor lost dog, and the food that Alice gave him made him strong enough to find his way home again. Sheep shearing. Now the meadows and pastures were velvety with thick grass, and the weather was warm. It was time to shear sheep.
On a sunny morning, Pierre and Louis went with Almanzo into the pasture, and they drove the sheep down to the washing pens. The long pen ran from the grassy pasture into the clear, deep water of Trout River. It had two gates opening into the pasture, and between the gates, a short fence ran to the water's edge. Pierre and Louis kept the flock from running away, while Almanzo took hold of a woolly sheep and pushed it through one gate. In the pen, Father and Lazy John caught hold of it. Then Almanzo pushed another one through, and Royal and French Joe caught it. The other sheep stared and bleated, and the two sheep struggled and kicked and yelled, but the men rubbed their wool full of brown soft soap and dragged them into the deep water. There the sheep had to swim. The men stood waist-deep in the swift water and held on to the sheep and scrubbed them well. All the dirt came out of their wool and floated downstream with the soap suds. When the other sheep saw this, every one of them cried, "Bah! Bah!" And they all tried to run away. But Almanzo and Pierre and Louis ran yelling around the flock and brought it back again to the gate. As soon as a sheep was clean, the men made it swim around to the end of the dividing fence, and they boosted it up the bank into the outer side of the pen. The poor sheep came out bleeding and dripping wet, but the sun soon dried it fluffy and white. As fast as the men let go of one sheep, Almanzo pushed another into the pen, and they caught it and soaped it and dragged it into the river. Washing sheep was fun for everybody but the sheep. The men splashed and shouted and laughed in the water, and the boys ran and shouted in the pasture. The sun was warm on their backs and the grass was cool under bare feet, and all their laughter was small in the wide, pleasant stillness of the green fields and meadows. One sheep butted John. He sat down in the river, and the water went over his head. Joe shouted, "Now if you had soap in your wool, John, you'd be ready for shearing." When evening came, all the sheep were washed, clean and fluffy white. They scattered up the slope, nibbling the grass, and the pasture looked like a snowball bush in bloom. Next morning, John came before breakfast, and Father hurried Almanzo from the table. He took a wedge of apple pie and went out to the pasture, smelling the clover and eating the spicy apples and flaky crust in big mouthfuls. He licked his fingers, and then he rounded up the sheep and drove them across the dewy grass into the sheepfold in the south barn. Father had cleaned the sheepfold and built a platform across one end of it. He and Lazy John each caught a sheep, set it up on the platform, and began cutting off its wool with long shears. The thick white mat of wool peeled back all in one piece, and the sheep was left in bare pink skin. With the last snick of the shears, the whole fleece fell on the platform, and the naked sheep jumped off it, yelling, "Bah! Bah!" All the other sheep yelled back at the sight, but already Father and John were shearing two more. Royal rolled the fleece tightly and tied it with twine, and Almanzo carried it upstairs and laid it on the loft floor. He ran upstairs and down again as fast as he could, but another fleece was always ready for him. Father and Lazy John were good sheep shearers. Their long shears snipped through the thick wool like lightning. They cut close to the sheep, but never cut its pink skin. This was a hard thing to do because Father's sheep were prize merinos. Merinos have the finest wool, but their skin lies in deep wrinkles, and it's hard to get all the wool without cutting them. Almanzo was working fast, running upstairs with the fleeces. They were so heavy that he could carry only one at a time. He didn't mean to idle, but when he saw the tabby barn cat hurrying past with a mouse, he knew she was taking it to her new kittens. He ran after her, and far up under the eaves of the big barn he found the little nest in the hay with four kittens in it. The tabby cat curled herself around them, loudly purring, and the black slits in her eyes widened and narrowed and widened again. The kittens' tiny pink mouths uttered tiny meows. Their naked little paws had wee white claws, and their eyes were shut. When Almanzo came back to the sheepfold, 6 fleeces were waiting, and Father spoke to him sternly. "Son," he said, "see to it you keep up with us after this."
"Yes, Father," Almanzo answered, hurrying. But he heard Lazy John say,
"He can't do it. We'll be through before he is."
Then Father laughed and said,
"That's so, John. He can't keep up with us."
Almanzo